Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of October 29th, 2017. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, Mariah Tinger. How are you doing, Mariah?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good, good, good. And we're joined by our other frequent guest, the prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Doing well. How are you doing?
Good, 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 good. Glad you could both be here. I remember just at the time that Hurricane Sandy, right, was 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. Is that all right? So tell me, DR, you had a nice piece up in the Washington Monthly over this weekend. Tell me, what is it about Sandy, the fifth year anniversary of Sandy, that we got to know about?
Yes, it's just, it's hard to believe it's been 5 years since that storm, which basically did so much destruction to New York and New Jersey. And I just looked back and remembered that there was this brief, very brief moment where people were saying that now the partisan divide over this issue would finally be set to the side, and then finally people would march together towards action. And of course, that brief moment turned out to be very, very fleeting, even though the damage from Superstorm Sandy lasted for a very, very long time, and how it was that storm that broke the media embargo on discussing the climate issue that extended all throughout the fall presidential campaign. None of the presidential moderators asked Obama and Romney one question. It was just complete radio silence. And then Mother Nature spoke and screamed, and people were forced to discuss this issue, at least for a time.
And yeah, you remember this was just before the second election of Barack Obama, our last real president. And he was palling around with Chris Christie. And we had this kumbaya moment where everyone was in. Hurricane Sandy, for those who maybe were too young to remember, I mean, that was a colossal storm that did huge amounts of damage to New York City, to proper, right, in all of sort of Long Island. And it was kind of the fulfillment of the Al Gore prediction of 10 years before that, where everyone mocked him for, right, we would be flooding in New York City. Yeah, it's 5 years ago, and I mean, we keep coming back to this topic of what's the shocker that's finally going to get people, right? So since then, we had Sandy, we've had Irene, we've had this year, we've had this jackhammer of hurricanes. And, what does it take? Mariah, what does it take?
I don't know what it takes. I mean, you were right. I remember Gore mentioned in his Inconvenient sequel that he had said in his Inconvenient Truth movie that the World Trade Center memorial would flood. And people really did mock him about that. And sure enough, it flooded in that storm.
And here in Boston, we've had, the discussion of, again, people may remember, but if you don't, a couple degrees of track to the east and a slightly different arrival with the high tide. It would have been Boston that took the brunt of that Sandy storm. Right, DR? I mean, we've talked about that. And Boston would be, for all we know, it's going to come yet, right? I mean, it's not. So Hurricane Sandy, 5 years. If you want. And look at all the progress we've made.
Yeah, I was thinking to myself, 5 years ago, the biggest controversy involving, a presidential administration, how it handled the climate crisis, was whether or not Obama would say no to the Keystone XL pipeline. Yeah. Those days seem pretty quaint now, don't they?
They seem like the halcyon days of when everything was good, when America was. I don't want to go there.
But at least the one thing that's good is that the technology marches forward with or without the rest of the,
The politics.
Political. Exactly. The technology's going, the solar's employing more people than anything else. And the prices are dropping drastically for solar power and wind power.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, and, right.
So at least that's happened over the last 5 years.
That has, and it's one of these things where people, the solar prices, you know, the price per installed watt, shall we say, of a solar panel has dropped way faster than people anticipated, right? And that's a good sign. I mean, that's, you know, the market is, you reach a point where the money begins to talk. If it's cheaper to make your energy with a solar panel than it is with coal, well, you know, it's cheaper, and that's what people do. And we may be heading that way. And
well, we're right. I mean, natural gas is already, natural gas is cheaper than coal, and that's what's killing coal, not solar panels.
Tell that, please write a letter to Mr. Pruitt. Tell him.
Seriously.
Well, I guess the other thing, though, to mention is, you know, Sandy was Sandy. Hurricane Maria that just marched through Puerto Rico is another incredibly devastating storm. Here we're now 2 weeks, a month out, almost a month since Maria hit Puerto Rico, and most of the island is still dark. I read somewhere that the most of the power generation is on the south coast of Puerto Rico, and most of the population is on the north coast, and between them is kind of a mountain range, and that's part of the issue, is that getting the power lines over that. But I saw a report in Bloomberg that said Elon Musk of Tesla fame has that there was more actual concrete interest in by the Puerto Rican government in bringing Tesla in to manufacture microgrids and the like. Did you see anything like that, D.R.?
Yeah, yes. There was a piece actually on NPR about Tesla being able to get the electricity back on in San Juan's Children's Hospital. Elon Musk refers to it as, quote, the first of many solar plus battery Tesla projects going live in Puerto Rico. And while it's an admiring thing to see, you do have to wonder, you know, shock doctrine being what it is, will fossil fuel interests try to sort of shut down Elon Musk and try to, you know, contrive some way to chase him out of Puerto Rico in order to make sure that dirty energy once again holds sway on the island?
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I mean, and I guess an example of that is a classic example of what looks to be from the outside plain old-fashioned gross corruption is that a company, I guess, that had two people in it a month ago, a company called Whitefish Energy, had two people in its employ on the day that Maria hit. They just took a $300 million contract to rebuild the at least parts of the Puerto Rico grid, right? Mm-hmm. And that the interesting thing is that Whitefish Energy resides in Whitefish, Montana, which just happens to also be the hometown of our Secretary of the Interior, Mr. Something-Something Zinke, right?
I'm sure there was a nationwide search.
Yeah, I'm sure. Only the best companies. I mean, it's well nigh unbelievable that these guys have the moxie, the sheer unadulterated, cojones to get up there and do something like that, that appears to be so obviously corrupt. I mean, I don't know. Did you either, you guys? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I read a little bit about that Whitefish company, and they certainly, but I mean, they ramped from what, two to some hundred, couple hundred employees. But they're saying, and I think the longest project they'd had before this was a 4 mile transmission line, and now they're doing something like, I don't know how many miles it is.
Hundreds of miles from what I saw.
Yeah, I mean, it's like hundreds of miles, and the longest they've ever done is 4. So like, do they have the experience to do this kind of thing? I mean, they seem to be confident. In the article I read, they said, oh yeah, we can do this, no problem. And you know, some of the issues is that you can't do it the normal way that you do it. I guess usually you use like a 30-foot bucket truck. Right, and in Puerto Rico, you need 90-foot bucket trucks and 100-foot ladders and helicopters because of that mountain range you're talking about. So it is sort of an atypical job. But I don't know.
It doesn't smell. I mean, I agree with you that it could be building over mountains, but I'm sure that there are utilities in the United States that have that experience. And it just doesn't pass the smell test.
And why build over the mountains if you can just, you know, do local generation.
Right.
Solar panels. But
So anyway, I guess let's just, before we move on from Puerto Rico, let's just reemphasize that Puerto Rico is an American protectorate. Those people are all American citizens. There are 3 million American citizens that have been without power for a month because of the slow reaction and basically the disregard of the alleged president of the United States. It's a travesty and it should be reversed. Please call your congressman and congressperson and tell them that this is unacceptable on so many levels. So let me put that aside. I want to talk about something that's at least vaguely more optimistic, a little bit more of a fun thing to talk about. I'll set it up this way, and you two guys can chime in. The Global Warming Solutions Act here in Massachusetts, the Global Warming Solutions Act, is commits the state to reductions in carbon emissions to a certain level by the year 20, and by the year 2020, and by the year 2030. That has gone along satisfactorily in terms of reducing the energy generation from electrical power plants and from buildings. But the remaining big piece of the carbon emission feature, the carbon emissions in the state of Massachusetts, come from transportation. That is to say, all the cars people drive around. And so now the Baker administration, to its credit, has begun to discuss ways to include the transportation sector in the Global Warming Solutions Act reductions, and to make changes in the transportation sector that can be claimed under the Global Warming Solutions Act. DR, did I get it? Am I anywhere in the right ballpark on what's at stake there?
Definitely. And it's going to be very, very interesting to see, you know, what steps the Baker administration takes in terms of reducing emissions in terms of transport. This is occurring at the same time that the recent announcement of the what's known as the C40 Clean Bus Declaration, where 12 mayors of 12 big cities around the world, London, Paris, Los Angeles, Barcelona, Copenhagen, Coito, Vancouver, Cape Town, Mexico City, Seattle, Milan, and Auckland have pledged that by 2025 they will only add all electric vehicles to their public transportation systems. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to see if there's a similar push here in Massachusetts, because mm-hmm. obviously mm-hmm. if you can reduce emissions from public transportation, that's a big, big climate win.
Right. And it turns out that over the next few weeks, the Baker administration will be holding what are called listening sessions for people to come and make comments and suggestions about how to reduce emission from automobiles. And that extends to things like encouraging the purchase of electric vehicles. And I think here in Massachusetts, there's a push to encourage the purchase of electric vehicles by people who may not, you might typically think, wouldn't buy an electric vehicle, by providing subsidies to low-income people to try and encourage a fair distribution of electric vehicles. There's a concept floating around. I hope that we can explore more in future shows, but it's called cap and invest, which mm-hmm. seems to be some sort of cap on pollution from things like automobile gasoline, and somehow collecting fees under that cap, but then reinvesting those fees into things like cleaner public transportation and electric car charging stations and stuff like that. Right? Does that mm-hmm. make any, I don't know if either of you saw any of that, but I think it's a little murky. Is that exactly, because the transportation center is very, transportation sector is very diffuse, right? Everyone's got an individual car. Right? Mm-hmm. So how do you control all those millions of cars driving around and get them to have less carbon emissions, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm always happy to hear about any sort of a, you know, carbon fee being applied. And I think there's some debate about whether the best thing to do with those fees is to give them back to people in terms of, you know, and by way of dividends, or to give them back as, you know, investments in better renewable energy mm-hmm. technologies. Mm-hmm. And but either way, at least putting a fee on them, whatever direction it ends up going, is a really good start.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the question is, is it even worth the breath to discuss I mean, I don't, and again, I don't know if this is part of the program, but, you know, some sort of what amounts to a fee at the gas pump, right? And I don't even want to say the word as to what that would be called, right? But if you pay an extra few pennies for each gallon of gasoline and that money goes into clean infrastructure, is that, a, you know, politically feasible in any sense of the word?
And, you know, something else I've always thought would be interesting is, you know, what if you put a little, you know, how the cigarette boxes have a Surgeon General's warning that this is bad for your health. And like, what if the gas pumps had a little warning that said, you know, burning this gasoline is bad for your health.
I think there was something, they tried that in California, I think, or there was some move, because you're absolutely right. We should somehow put on the gasoline pump a statement about the impacts of burning fossil fuels, which being, I don't know
if it would do anything, but, you know, just starts the communication going. And but yeah, you know, it'd be great if Massachusetts is encouraging purchase of electric vehicles, just as the Tesla Model 3 is starting to come to mass market a reasonable price. And it's a very nice car, I think.
I think that we need to. So we'll put up the links to the dates. I think they're over. There's one on the 30th. And then there's one in a couple in early November around the state. Their chances to begin to participate in the dialogue about how best to reduce emissions in the transportation sector. Of course, as I say, there's a million good ideas, but getting them all in a coherent form is the governor's job, and we got to help him out doing that. So it's at least we're talking about this very important topic. All right, so we got kids. We got to leave it there. We'll put down discussion for this week. We'll try and put links to most of what we talked about on the blog at massclimateaction.org/blog, and it'll be on the Facebook at /massclimateaction. You can pick us up on Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, etc. Basically, any place you can get a podcast. We will close where we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the reckless policies of the new administration not be accepted as normal, and that the United States put a long-term and equitable price on carbon, and maybe even one on transportation fuels here in Massachusetts. Anyway.
Indeed.
Thanks very much for being here, DR.
Thanks.
Mariah, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
And hey, we'll talk to you guys all next week. Take care. See you soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.
Very cool.